Okay, you ready? Is your mic on? Everything sounds good.
Semblance, yeah.
Now it's garbage.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night. I am Scott.
I'm Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Scotty. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm a little nasally.
Yeah, you had a little head cold for a couple of days.
Yeah. So my voice might be a little strange,
It's
more
okay.
deep than usual.
Well, that's kind of sexy, but I could do most of the talking if you want. I mean, I can just ramble on because that's what
I'm
I do.
fine. I can talk. You know what we're doing today, Joe?
Well, I would say that we're talking trash, but I think we're talking smash. I like this movie.
Wow.
This movie's boss.
Well, let's do the setup here, all right? What we normally do before you get into that. We're talking trash today. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, and often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review a film unless you know what the worst is. And today, we are ending the Chuck Norris month. We've been doing movies, Chuck Norris movies. We've been checking out his movies and giving him a second chance and seeing if we'd like any of his movies. And today's the last. What a good way to end it. Because today we are talking about a movie that's tagline is Kane's justice is revenge. Kane's weapon is himself. We are talking about 1981's An Eye for an Eye. It has a 5.5 on IMDb from 4,780 reviewers. It had a $4 million budget and made $12 million. It was directed by Steve Carver. He directed the movies Jocks. That's one we've actually seen. I always name the ones that you and me
We've
have actually
seen
seen.
Jocks. I don't recall.
Oh, it was a bad movie night movie.
Ah.
And he also did the Lone Wolf McQuade. That is another Chuck Norris film.
Okay.
It was written by James Bruner, who did Invasion USA, Mission in Action, and Delta Force. These people like to stick around with Chuck Norris.
Wait, but did he do all the missing in action movies?
Yes, he wrote them all.
Oh boy. Okay.
It was also written by William Gray, who did The Changeling
Oh wow.
and Prom Night.
Oh.
Yeah, very interesting.
Okay. All right. You're
So
the
yeah,
horror guy.
I mean, yeah, he did two. Well, I would say that one classic because I don't think Prom Night 1 is as good as 2, but Changeling is amazing. So.
What do you mean? See you later, alligator. I think Prom Night's good. First one.
I'm not a big fan, but yeah, that's a whole nother podcast.
Okay.
Today, this movie's a treat. We lucked into a good one.
Okay, so I'm happy that we're ending on this because this has been a very rough run for me.
Yes.
I have not been very happy with the situation.
We were very tired of Chuck Norris movies after watching them.
Yeah.
You can see a pattern. You can see his what he does in his movies, and he does it all the time. It's like his own cliches, his own tropes. And it
Yeah.
wasn't entertaining tropes. And so I think we got to the point where we're like, why do people love him so much?
Right, but
Like,
I this movie kind of explains that.
well, this movie is everything we kind of wanted all of these movies to be.
Yeah, I mean, he's not in a jungle in this one, you know, rolling around in the mud with like ammo strapped to his body and a bandana and all that stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
But I gotta tell you, he brought the martial arts back in this one.
Kind
He
of.
did. I think he did. He really kicked ass in this. But I will, can I just say one thing, please? A Chuck Norris without his beard,
It's off-putting.
it's like Dolly Parton without big boobs. You
Oh,
know?
interesting.
Like, I couldn't imagine it. And I'm here having to imagine it. And I see it and I'm like, you know, he looks 12 years old. I don't know. I don't like
He does not look 12 years old.
He does. He has that haircut. That's like a bowl haircut.
Yeah.
He looks young. He looks much younger without the beard.
Well, he looks younger than all the movies we've done so far.
Yeah, I feel like these kicks would have landed pretty hard if he had that beard, you know, because he needed the look. In this movie, he wore like windbreakers and tight pants.
Oh, a lot of sweaters with button downs, like the collars like sticking out.
Cardigans, yeah. Sweater vests, windbreakers, and tight Wrangler jeans.
Yeah, I would say that he never looks particularly badass.
No, he doesn't look badass. He definitely looks like, you know, in like a 1980s dad.
Yeah.
But when he's doing those roundhouse kicks, I was like, yeah.
I think that you're mixing the reason that you enjoyed how much you enjoyed this film with the karate chopping and the kicking. Because what it really was this movie was crazy from the moment go.
Hey, I don't like it, man. Something's wrong.
Will you just relax, huh? Okay.
Oh, yeah, it was.
And I think we were on board for the crazy.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I don't want all this drama and all this, like, you know, dialogue and all that. Just get right into this shit, okay? This is Chuck Norris.
But it's there, too, in this.
It is. There's a plot here. But I want it to get right into the dirt, you know, just roll around in it. And, yep, that's what happened here. And I was like, yeah.
All right, let's talk about it. Let's talk about this movie, because it starts off very... it starts off very quick and it doesn't mess around. We thought we got like maybe like five of those title cards of the production companies.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, ah, shit, this is a bad sign. And then it didn't give us that opening credits running, you know, like there's so much driving or there's a music, you know, montage of the credits. The credits are slowly happening over our scenes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so what we find out is Chuck Norris and his partner, played by the great Terry Kaiser.
The great Terry Kaiser?
Everybody, if anybody listens to the show, they know I love Terry Kaiser.
God damn, Dave. Shit. It smells like a horse turd, man.
Well, if I start smoking something that smells good, we'd both get arrested.
Yeah, he shows up as they're both like undercover, I guess. And they're cops, they're partners, and we don't really know, really. It kind of like unfolds and we start figuring things out, but they seem to be watching some hotel.
Yeah, it's like there's some kind of sting operation happening.
Or an apartment building. We're not really sure what's happening, because when they go inside this place, they watch a guy go in, so they follow. And then they go into a lobby, and about 20 people are watching TV, and it's like one of those one... old set TVs with the rabbit ears.
Yeah, but when I ask you about this, I'm like, okay, where are they? In a doctor's office? Because
if you remember in Blues Brothers, what, like there's all like 50 people in the on the lobby and they're all watching the TV and he throws the one guy Cheese Whiz.
Yes, okay. So apparently you're saying in 1981 there wasn't a lot of people that have television sets.
I'm saying that so, if you're living in this slummy area, mm-hmm. having a TV set would probably be a luxury.
So that's why they're all in the lobby watching TV.
They're all probably watching it. Yeah, like, that's the best way to probably do it. It was probably rare to have a TV. Like, I'm trying to think when I had a TV for the first time in my room.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever had one.
It had to be 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably. I had, like, a little piece of crap one that was, like, 13 inches.
I had a black and white one when I had to like, tune it. Yeah.
Yeah, later on, when I was, like, maybe 16, 17, I don't think I ever had, like, when I was 8 or 9.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying, yeah. I think when I was, like, 11, I had my black and white TV.
We were a boss back then. Yeah.
Parents I got like were, a handy, a hand-me-down.
Parents
hand-me-down.
Are good parents.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. But, yeah, I mean, that's probably why they're all sitting here. But they're watching it. And then the funniest part is our cops go and watch the TV with them all. Like, that's normal. Terry Kaiser's watching the TV. We don't really know why. And then we start slowly understanding. But while Terry Kaiser's watching the TV, a guy that they watch go into the building comes down. And Chuck Norris stares at this guy. There's a lot of staring at each other in this movie.
It's very awkward, but they seem to know each other. So Chuck Norris says, you know, what are you doing here or whatever? And he's like, oh, you know, he's involved somehow.
Not even that. He's like, is it ready? And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, like it's a
follow me.
Yeah, like he's involved in the sting operation. So I thought he was like an undercover cop as well.
I did too. I didn't know. I guess this is their informant.
He's the informant, but apparently he leaves the building and leads them to a back alley where there's a freaking ambush. Now, we have no idea what's going on yet as far as plot. It's just there's an ambush and he's like, oh my God, it's a setup. Tuck and roll, tuck and roll.
And that's where we figure out they're cops. I mean, like we know that Chuck Norris is probably going to be a cop. But we didn't know if he was undercover and Terry Kaiser wasn't. We really didn't know. And then we start finding out because he says it's a setup. It's an ambush. And Terry Kaiser gets shot very quickly.
Oh, my God. He doesn't just get shot. Okay. Well,
yeah. So it progresses. He gets shot, but he still is managing to get up and hide behind a car to shoot people, which I was like shocked because he got shot really bad in the chest.
Oh, my God. It was so bad.
But they double down on it because the firefight ensues. Even Chuck Norris is shot. Mm-hmm. As this thing progresses, it gets more insane. And this is how we knew we were watching something interesting because Terry Kaiser is not only between, like, sitting behind a car shot, another car rams him while it's on fire. And it rams him between two cars, crushing him, and then setting him on fire.
That was the craziest stunt. Like, I want to, like, commend the person that did this stunt because, I mean, it just looks so good. It looks so good. He was on fire, and he was rammed between two cars, and it was just crazy.
Yeah, and we have to watch Terry Kaiser burning. No. Like, I mean, crushed and burning.
I was in shock because
insane.
I thought that he was going to be in this movie, you know? Like, I would say maybe 3.5 minutes into this movie, and he's dead.
I know, you were looking at me. And by the way, I guess we didn't even say Terry Kaiser, by the way, is Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's. For anybody who doesn't
know. He gets killed a lot in movies. Christ's sake.
He does.
Jesus.
He's in a movie called Mannequin 2 that is a masterpiece. I'm not sure if anybody
knows
about it.
Oh my God, it's not a masterpiece. Jesus Christ.
I'm just going to throw it out there.
See that guy down there? I want to kill him. I want to hurt him. And I want to eliminate him now. Go now.
No one messes with Count Spretzel and his love life.
Yeah, so he is. We have to watch him die, like, terribly. And Chuck Norris, wounded, shoots one of the guys escaping, but then is able to go over to Terry Kaiser and see and watch him die.
Yeah.
Because he lives a little longer than he should. And then Chuck Norris gets up and chases these guys into that building that he met the one guy. And he goes into one of the rooms. He chases the guys and he gets into one of the rooms and the guy pulls out a switchblade. Now, Chuck Norris is hurt, but he still has a fight. Instead of, they both have guns, by the way.
Yeah. Well, instead of just shooting him.
They put their guns away to have a fight.
Yeah, he like roundhouses him out the window. It was the best stunt.
After he slices at him, Chuck Norris just kicks him out a window onto a car.
See, I knew that from this moment that we have something special here because you don't get this kind of opening.
You don't.
Like, we had this. We're only 4.5 minutes in.
We kept going, whoa.
And we're like, whoa, yeah. And we're like cheering. And this guy's chucked out the freaking. I said chucked.
He chucked. Okay.
Anyways, he's chucked out the window and he lands on a freaking car. Meanwhile, the police show up. So we know that the sting operation just went damn wrong. He was supposed to, like, you know, stop whatever was happening, but apparently it just went south.
Yeah.
So,
well, while he's standing there looking out the window at the guy he's just murdered, we get introduced to our cops because at the door, suddenly all the cops are there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're there quick. And in fact, even the chief of police is there for some reason, who is played by Richard Roundtree.
Okay.
Shaft. Yeah. Awesome. So this movie's already stacked with the cast. And we also get another cop who is kind of like the only other buddy cop that Chuck Norris has in the department. And the character's name is Tom McCoy. He's played by Matt Clark. You know him. He's in The Heat of the Night, Outlaw Josie Wales, And Back to the Future 3, he's the bartender.
Wait, hold on. In Back to the Future Part 3, oh, he's the one that serves him the shot that he never takes?
Yes. And then he they put him in another movie, too, because he played old Prospector in something, too. I think he's in one of these movies, like, I don't know, it was another movie where he kept, they kept, oh, he's the old Prospector in A Million Ways to Die in the West. So they kept putting him in movies as those jokes.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. He always looked that age. Like, I literally, when I was looking at him, I thought you were going to say, isn't that the bartender in Back to the Future 3?
No, I didn't notice it, but I just, one thing I did notice about that actor is that, like, the character, he just seemed like just moseying about. You know, like, he didn't really have nothing to do. It was just, he was just moseying around. And
yeah, he never looks like he slept good in this movie. He always looks like a disaster.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he, all of them are there. And he gets, Chuck Norris gets brought in, and basically, the way that Richard Roundtree talks to him at the police station, like, it is the most batshit crazy thing I've ever heard another cop say to a cop. Now, one of their fellow cops have just been murdered.
His friend was killed.
His partner, and the chief of police is acting like, that guy got killed. He's dead now, and he's burned alive, and he's talking about him like he didn't even exist.
Right. Well, all he cares about is the fact that, this scene is like a major, cop movie cliche where the chief of police is always yelling at either Riggs or Murtaugh or John McClane or somebody's getting yelled at behind the desk and, you know, turn in your badge type deal. You botch this whole operation and it's just a cliche.
It's more like you failed in those movies. In this way, he's saying it like, basically very unfamiliar with the dead cop and like basically making it sound like you failed, you did all these terrible things, and that guy's dead. And it's like he's never saying like, I know you lost your partner, we lost a good cop today. It's nothing like that. It's just like, you're a failure piece of crap, and that other guy died because he failed his job too.
A police department cannot operate that way.
We were set up.
Oh, really? Your undercover operation was the best kept secret this narcotics bureau has ever had. So tell me something, my friend. Where was the leak? On this end, someone here? If you've got charges to make, you better make them. I'd love to hear them. Unless, of course, you're just making excuses to cover up for your own incompetence. Let me tell you what I think. I think you and your partner Pierce blew it. I think you walked into a situation my maid Nan could have snipped out. Your partner Pierce gets incinerated and you go berserk in front of a street full of people, turning the whole stupid thing into a headline story and blowing 14 goddamn months of work. Now, wouldn't you say that's a pretty fair assessment?
Yeah, it was kind of harsh. And, wild. He was saying that, you know, there's a leak in the department. Someone's feeding information to these bad guys. Now, mind you, we have no idea yet what the situation is with the bad guys, but he does say there's a leak in the department. And so
there was an ambush. He was like, what are you suggesting? That someone set you up? And he's like, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I guess he goes to suspend him, but he says, don't even bother. And he slaps his badge and his gun.
He does the whole cliche thing.
Yeah. So he's out for vengeance on his own.
Yep. And so I was like, okay, it's badass to see Richard Roundtree, but this is going to be the situation where he is the leak in the department. I started speculating already early on.
Well, we have a theory, you and me, constantly when we watch movies, one of the signs of a movie spoiler, just what happens to be if you have a big actor, it's usually that third big actor that to me is always the villain.
Right.
Usually you have your two leads that are very huge stars. And then you have that third person. You're like, why is this person in this movie randomly?
Yep. And that's usually the villain. So I was like calling this shit out already. I'm like, Richard Roundtree is going to be the bad guy. I just know it.
But this movie's stacked with big people. Yeah. But we know like everybody who shows up in this movie, which is really wild to me. Yeah. So he quits and he goes home. And the next scene we see is that he's at a funeral for his partner. And then we learn that also wasn't very clear. His girlfriend, because I thought it was his wife. It's his girlfriend.
Her name is Rosalind Chow. She played Keiko on Deep Space Nine.
All-Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek.
She was
Star
on
Trek,
Next Generation as
well. Yeah. So, yeah, she's a Trek person. So, she is a news anchor. And we find that out because we see a little bit of her footage from, she's doing a report on the dock and like what's going on with the shipping down there. There's some kind of issue with the shipping by the docks.
Okay. Well, I wanted to say before, because at the funeral, well, when we first see her, then that's when you realize, oh, that's where Terry Kaiser was watching the TV.
Yeah,
because she was on the, it was the reporter. She was on the screen. It's his girlfriend. So at the funeral, though, she, her acting is a little suspect in this sequence. The characters, I think a big problem with this movie probably is that nobody feels like a real person.
Right.
They feel very bizarre, or they feel like one-dimensional, mm-hmm. like characters of a TV show. Yeah. I would say this movie could have been cut as a TV show. That this was like a long arc of one season of a TV show.
Yeah.
Especially in the 70s. Like, they even have theme music for him, like the main character. That sounds like the intro to like a 70s sitcom. Like a 70s Dukes of Hazzard or Chips or something like that.
Yeah, it kind of does.
I always imagined the credits were about to roll any second on every scene when they played the music.
It was just going to end with Chuck Norris doing like an air kick.
Yeah, just a freeze
like
frame.
Like a freeze frame.
It felt like, I guarantee you could make an edit of this. That would be really funny. But she's like asking Chuck Norris, what happened? Who is this? And he's like, well, I haven't found out all the information either. We're very confused of what was going on. We thought we were onto a lead. And she's like, I'm going to find this. I'm going to catch those sons of bitches. You know, like that whole thing. But it's so over the top how it was done.
Yeah.
It just, it almost feels comical. Like, they don't feel like people. It just feels like they're reading like stereotypical lines.
Yeah.
That a person would say in one of these movies. But sure as hell, she does go and try to investigate the whole thing herself.
Mm-hmm.
Chuck Norris goes home to his house on the dock. This is all cliche, by the way.
It is cliche.
I don't know
how
where.
How does he have this house?
Where did this all start? At least this movie actually explains itself. This is one of those funny movies that everything that the cop does, you kind of want to know, where did this start first? Because it has all of the tropes. Right, he's got a perfectly amazing, fast-moving car that's expensive. He has, like, I want to say fancy clothes, but he always has, like, a new outfit.
I mean, for the 80s.
He doesn't look like you're, like, the other detective makes sense. Or the guy from Back to the Future that we were joking
right,
about.
Right, he's wearing, like, leisure suits and shit.
Yeah, that guy looks all gruffed up. Like, you would expect that on a cop salary.
Yeah.
But then Chuck Norris lives in this really cool house that's on the docks, and it's all fancy. It looks amazing. He has like a security system that actually can open and shut gates all over his house.
Yeah, it's like Fort Knox in there. It's fancy. Crazy. I'm like, wait, how does he afford this on a cop salary and that damn car?
And then he has, and then I'm telling you, the trope after trope after trope, he has the best dog on earth. So he's got this dog named Mort.
All right. Yeah, Mortimer.
Mort. He
is smarty pants.
The dog actually, he comes home and he was like exercising. He comes home, throws his clothes on the floor and he goes, you know, can you make yourself handy? And the dog's picking up his clothes and putting them in baskets. And I'm like, okay.
That's amazing.
Oh, this is amazing, first off. But also.
Oh, don't forget, he's a bachelor. Okay.
So he's a bachelor.
So.
Oh, and also he trained in the ways of the martial arts.
Yes, of course. Of course.
Because it turns out that the news reporter, Terry Kaiser's girlfriend in this, played by
Rosalind Chow,
her father is the guy who taught him how to fight.
He's his master.
Yeah, his master. We're going to get into him in a minute. But you get all those tropes of this character, and he's like amazing. Like, he's known as the weapon. Although, unfortunately, He has failed so miserable in the opening of this movie. I will say the police work in this movie is dreadful.
It's awful.
Dreadful.
Is awful. I'm telling you, I don't know what it is about 1980s police officers, but they're trash.
I don't know what's happening. No one listens to anybody. No one does. Everybody in this movie doesn't do anything they should be doing at any moment. It's kind of funny and quaint. In its own way.
Like, these cops are like doing everything short of like scratching their heads with their guns. They're so fucking stupid. But
even Chuck Norris. So it's even funny that he was a cop at one minute because he doesn't follow any protocol.
No protocol.
Yeah.
No protocol. So, he does what he wants with his tight pants.
So it turns out that the reporter has come on to some kind of evidence. And we see that she's being chased through a train station. In the train station, she calls Chuck Norris and she says, there is a problem. I found evidence. I'm going to get it to you, but I'm being chased. And he's like, what train station? She hangs up.
I know. I'm like, so
no information.
Here we go with this now.
So she's being chased. Now, this is funny. Okay. By the way, this actor has the best damn nickname. He has the best name in Hollywood. I don't care what he says. Professor Toro Tanaka. Okay. That's the actor's name.
Professor
Toro Tanaka. Yeah. You know him.
Wait, say it again. Tanaka.
Yeah.
But I like it.
Professor Toro Tanaka.
Okay.
He is playing the professor in this movie.
Wow.
He was in Pee Wee, A Big Adventure.
Yes.
He's in Running Man. He's Sub-Zero is now Plain Zero. He was in Black Rain. This guy, he was a professional wrestler. He was actually a tag team duo with Mount Fuji in WWF.
So, okay.
Yeah, he's been in tons of stuff. Yeah. He his whole deal in this movie is grunting and smiling.
Yeah.
He can't walk in this movie for some reason. So he is chasing her in the worst way possible. If you're going to chase a woman in a subway, like a train station, don't send the slowest guy, I would think. They keep showing that he looks at other guys who show their guns, but that guy never does anything. So he is forced to chase this woman all over the place. She, by the way, she's running in crowded areas, not saying, there's a huge man chasing me.
I mean, she clearly, here's the thing, these freaking 80s movies, these ridiculous, like, she's running through the station and she's screaming and you know, carrying on. She looks like she's being chased. Nobody is helping her. And can I just please say, this is not New York City, so I know there'd be like at least one or two cops.
We're in San Francisco.
There's not one police officer anywhere she can run to?
There's no police officers in the train stations. And there's a part where he chucks people over an escalator.
Yeah, nobody's calling the police.
Nobody's doing anything.
Now, this guy, let me tell you something. He is impossible to miss, okay? Impossible. He looks like a brick wall.
Yeah.
There is no fucking way that you're not going to, you know, you can't miss this guy, all right? You can't. So she's, we don't know what happens, but she calls Chuck Norris and says, I'm going to give you the evidence.
Yeah, I just wanted to give you a fun fact before you get too far. They wanted Andre the Giant for this part.
Oh, wow.
And they were like, I don't think this guy is too tall enough. I want him taller than Chuck Norris.
Right? What is Chuck Norris, 5'9"?
I don't know. And this guy's like 5'11". So they put him on, like, they gave him bigger shoes.
Lifted shoes.
So I was wondering if you were talking about it, because I was like, why is he limping? And you said he had a club foot, but I'm like, when is that ever established?
Well, I mean, I was just guessing because they gave him like a big, so he was wearing one regular shoe and then one like big, big clunky Frankenstein shoe.
Why? I wonder why. I couldn't find any information about that, but that's interesting.
Yeah, but he was wearing that.
They ended up going, you know what? He works and he's cheaper.
Oh my God. But I mean,
Andre Giant would have been too much money.
Yeah, he probably would have been too much
money.
Could
you imagine Andre Giant chasing her in San Francisco, though?
No, I mean, he would probably get around faster, so I get it.
That would have been interesting.
She would never have had a chance with Andre the Giant. But,
Dread Pirate Roberts. Go ahead.
But so, you know, she hangs up on Chuck Norris, and then she's running through the subway, and, you know, he grabs her a couple times by the hair. She runs out of the subway, and then she manages to get home, you know, by taking a taxi.
But this goes on for a long time.
So she's...
You're not going to talk about the taxi?
So the taxi driver... Oh my God. Can we talk about this lady, first of all? She's... I don't even know what to say about her. She gets into the taxi and there's a woman driver. Then it's nonchalant.
She goes, hey, you getting chased by someone,
getting
sweetie?
Chased by somebody? Oh, who's chasing you, honey?
Some creep giving you a hard time.
Please, God, I don't want me.
And he's right there in front of the car, like.
And she just steps on the fucking gas and hits him.
No,
right?
She backs off, and he gets hit by a
VW bug. Oh my God! Okay, first of all, you're talking about a VW bug, which is the smallest, probably the smallest car in the world in 1981, hitting a monster.
It hits him.
I mean, he doesn't go down. He probably just like stumbles a little bit.
He does get pushed down, and to get up, he slams his arms like Hulk style on the hood, in the hood, and he puts dents of his arms on the hood, and then he decides to pick up the entire car and lift it.
I thought he was going to rip this Poindexter guy right out of the car and kill him. I was like, oh my God, the guy was scared shitless. He lifted up the car. Like, okay, we get it, dude. We get it. You're a monster. Yeah,
this is like when the Hulk was fighting the Abomination in Harlem. It's like, how is nobody calling the cops? How is this not on the news?
I know, right?
Only until maybe an hour and a half into this movie, they go, there was a guy that was ripping up the town.
Oh, yeah. Eyewitnesses reported that there was a guy chasing a girl in a subway and ripping up the town and beating someone's car up. And I was like, thank you that
you mentioned that happened in this movie. Thanks,
because that would have been helpful if you called the police at that moment. But whatever, why even do anything smart? No, not at all. So
I had to point it out, sorry, before you forgot about the VW bug getting punched.
Yeah, so Chuck Norris is rushing off to try and find her so he can help her. And, you know, obviously,
it's only because she calls him again.
Yeah.
She finally calls him again, but then does a thing where she holds the phone and not say anything to him.
And someone's beating down her door.
So we're not even kidding. He punches the door apart. The big guy got there.
Again, this is an apartment building. Nobody's calling the police.
Yeah.
Until we see that she's holding a key in her hand, which obviously that's where the evidence is that she's hiding.
Yeah, so she's got to figure out where to put the key.
We don't see where she puts it, but no idea. They come in and they snap her like a twig.
We watch him strangle her to death.
It's terrible. So her boyfriend just died, who is Chuck Norris's partner,
yeah,
Terry Kaiser. And now Chuck Norris's friend, who's the daughter of his mentor and master, is now dead. They're both dead within 2 days of each other.
Yeah.
And you see the next shot is like all the police all over the place, all over the apartment.
He gets there.
But now, mind you, he's no longer a cop. So they could just throw his ass out. But
the one guy, the friend, brings him in.
Yeah. What are we calling him? He looks like Barnaby Jones.
He just looks beat.
I just showed my age.
Nice. What I love is that, this is bizarre, and I guess I have to ask you this. We didn't talk about it during the movie, but this is one of those scenes that I didn't understand the police work at all. So he brings her, Chuck Norris, into the room and shows her body, which has now been hung over the shower head in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a shower curtain. It's closed. I kept thinking it was Ace Ventura. Like, was it closed before? Was it open? You know, that whole thing. Because I was like, what? Isn't it fingerprints on that? Right? Because he grabs it and opens the shower curtain to show her hanging there and then shuts it. And I was like, what's the point of that?
But they don't do fingerprinting in these 80s movies.
But I have even more of a question for you, right? Because they say that later on, they say that her neck. The spinal column was like completely crushed. And now, first off, when they show her on the examining table, she has no bruises.
She has one tiny bruise.
One tiny bruise. It would be like marble.
Yeah.
It would be. They said that it was crushed. So I'm going, why did they go out of their way to set it up as a suicide? Why hang her over the shower curtain?
Right.
Like the shower head. I mean, why do that? Because it's not a suicide. And you know why it's not a suicide? Because the door was humanly punched apart.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they did this. They could have just thrown her against the wall.
Yeah, it seemed like too elaborate. And like I said, if that type of noise was happening where neighbors could hear punching of the door.
Oh, that bothers me too. I forget about that. Yeah.
Like, how did it take this long? Like, nobody heard a goddamn thing?
Yeah, you know, and that's crazy because, thanks for pointing that out, because another woman who lives in the building, which is her friend who works with her, comes down in the crime scene and says, I want my things. I left my things. This was an odd moment.
I didn't understand what was happening here.
I didn't either.
At that moment, this chick comes downstairs where I thought that they were in some sort of townhome situation because it looks like there's like carpeted stairs.
There is.
But I'm like, okay, I don't understand what's going on. There's 300 cops in here just tampering all over evidence and shit. 80s cops are such trash. But then she comes down and she tells the cop, she tells Richard Roundtree, I have things in there I need to get. And he's very dismissive of her. So I'm like, okay, who is this? So we learn that she talks to Chuck Norris, that she actually works with Rosalind Chow at the studio. You know, she's not a reporter, but she's a video editor. And she had left some things in her apartment because they're friends.
So, she's like, I left my clothes?
And she left some clothes and some things. And I'm like, okay, weird.
That was confusing.
First of all. But they had to set this scene up because we know that she, later on she finds the key.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah, I guess. Yeah, I mean
they had it's
odd because I kept thinking, who is this woman? Why is this happening?
Well, what they were implying was that she borrowed some of her clothes.
Yeah. Well, maybe. I guess so. I don't even know. It's just a very, very, like, convenient plot point.
Yeah.
And the funniest part is she's crying on the stairs and you know, Chuck Norris gets kicked out. You're not a cop anymore. So leave. You know, only personnel that can stay, which, yeah, of course. When he's walking out, he sees her crying on the staircase and just gives his, like, handkerchief to her. And she says, why her? Why did this happen? And you think he's going to say something profound? And he goes, and he touches her shoulder and just leaves. And I kept going, wow.
Like, we all know that Chuck Norris is not much of an actor.
I was like, not even a person, because I was like, oh, these two are definitely, I didn't think, did you think for a minute that this was going to be the love interest?
No.
I didn't, I just thought it was a random moment in the movie that was really strange.
It was a very strange setup. It's like, okay, first of all, if my friend had just died brutally, my first thought wouldn't be, oh, I left some shoes in her apartment. That wouldn't be my first thought. I'm just saying.
I agree.
So then, here we go into this situation now. It gets deeper because he goes to visit his mentor and master, who is her father, Rosalind Chow's father. And they get attacked. They get attacked by the triads.
Just to point out, this actor's name is Mako. Another amazing name. That's it. Mako. He's in so many things.
Oh, wow.
He's been around for a very long time. He was in the Conan films. Ah. He played Splinter in TMNT, the animated Turtles film.
Nice.
Just wanted to point out. And he was in Sidekicks with him again.
Oh, sweet. On. Okay, that's cool. I like this guy.
So, yes, he's actually really great in this movie.
Yeah, he's cool. So he's her father, and he's just, you know, in his Zen garden in the house.
He's like, I want revenge.
And he wants revenge for his daughter. And so they go into a partnership where they're going to try and take this shit down together.
Well, it only happens because, like you said, a helicopter that was dressed like an American flag, that's painted like an American flag, just starts attacking them. And what's really odd is that soldiers, foot soldiers, just start like descending onto this base. Yeah. It's like on a cliff. So they have to climb it. So they literally, when I say this, I'm not even kidding. They come from land, sea, and air. Like they just everywhere you can think, they're there. They're grapple hooking out of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming from the road.
They're dressed like lab technicians. In the helicopter.
Yeah, they are. Just random soldiers getting shot. And by the way, one scene is so funny because the guy in the helicopter is shooting at them. And one scene is Chuck Norris is fighting guys grapple hooking over the wall. And literally the guy shooting at them.
Mm-hmm.
I kept saying they're shooting their own men. And in the shot doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Makes no sense. They get attacked and they get out of it together.
Both Mako and him are fighting, but Chuck Norris literally goes around the whole house and kicks everybody.
Oh my God.
I mean, he's kicking people off the cliff.
He's just roundhousing people off the cliff. And just, I mean, I love these action scenes. I mean, we did not get enough of this shit in the last three movies. We just didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, we watched movies where he was just literally skulking in the deep, dark night. And, there's like nothing going on here. You know, he's in his tight jeans and he's roundhousing in his windbreaker and with that hair bouncing about. Like, and I'm just loving it because although I don't like the psh, 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 slapping scenes, there was very few of those here. It wasn't that bad where it's like oversaturated. And he was just kicking people's ass all over the place. And it was fantastic. So I appreciated that. I was like, okay, this is a very Chuck Norrisy movie.
Yeah.
Very Chuck Norrisy.
It keeps you entertained. Every time it gets like dull, it's like, here I come again.
Yeah, he starts just roundhousing people left and right. Yeah. I mean, he's beating the shit out of everyone. It was fantastic. We went from having almost no action beatdown scenes to having it all.
Yeah, this movie had everything we were hoping for in all of the movies, except maybe the one-liners aren't that great. He might say one.
This is not going very well.
I don't know why you'd say that.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something I'm disappointed about, though, is that for some reason, Mako's supposed to be the guy who taught him.
Right.
But he doesn't really get the chance to shine, fighting-wise.
No.
Every time they cut back to him fighting, he looks like he's fighting the same three people. He's fighting this one guy so hard, this guy's bleeding out of his mouth so much, and he just, every time they come back to him, he's punching that guy again.
Yeah.
I kept going, that guy is dead. He's got an ult, he's bleeding from eternally. Like, you know, he's just like, blood's pouring out of his mouth. I think he's done, man. You know, but he's not. Mako's not getting the spotlight that you kind of feel like he should.
No, I think they told him to dial it back because, you know, this is Chuck Norris's movie.
I know,
they
that's a shame. It's a kind of a shame because it was his daughter who was just murdered.
Oh yeah, and he's angry as hell, and he's going to take down whoever is responsible for all of this.
Yeah, and so I love that aspect of it. That's one of the highlights of the movie is that. You kind of got these father and, you know, friend partnering up to get revenge. And it's kind of cool. Well, what's really weird is that we start getting introduced to like a couple more plot lines of this. We find out that Rosalind Chow's like boss.
Who is played by the amazing, incomparable, freaking national treasure. Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee's in this film. Now, that's really interesting that Christopher Lee's in this film because he virtually gets to do whatever he wants, which is walk around looking like a badass,
just pipe smoking. He fucking does. You know, he could literally be wearing any outfit, anything. He could be wearing a bikini and still be menacing as fuck. And I love it. He's just menacing. That voice that just goes through your body and shakes your innards. It's so rad.
It's crazy because I guess he is the head or owns the company that is the news channel.
Okay, so yeah, he's the head of the news channel.
I feel like he's got more to do, but that's all I can really gather.
No, that's it. But the crazy thing is that the friend was here's the thing. The one thing that was a little bit off-putting to me is that Rosalind Chow had evidence about some kind of conspiracy going on, right? Some kind of drug running, some kind of something going on. But nobody ever checked her apartment. Did you notice that?
Well, they did. There was a whole thing because they ransacked it when they killed her. And when they got there, they also said they locked it down. There was a big thing about how Richard Roundtree apparently locked it down and is investigating himself. And they think that's suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
So Chuck Norris is kind of like, I don't trust this guy.
Right.
Because his friend, the cop at the station, he's still his friend. He's saying like, I can't go near it. I'm not in charge of this case.
Right.
So he allowed him to come to the autopsy. Right. And of course he got Richard Roundtree was there again. He's always there. Mm-hmm. Every time Chuck Norris does something, Richard Roundtree's right there. So he like catches him in the hallway and he's like, oh, I find you suspicious. You're always... It just so happens that she was murdered. Your partner was murdered. I'm starting to think something's fishy about you. It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, and so I guess what it comes down to is that Chuck Norris goes and talks to the reporter because she says that, you know, she has like videos of her and he's wondering if she knows anything outside of that.
This is the friend Heather that actually lives upstairs and she's the one that said that they, you know, she had tapes and stuff and clothes of hers. So she supposedly has footage of her talking of Rosalind Chow talking about this, whatever's happening down at the docks.
Yes. There was a footage that they had taped and he wants to go by and see if there's anybody around in the background of the footage.
Right.
And of course, there is. The guy who set them up in the opening that brought them to the alleyway is in the back.
Tony Montoya.
I'm so mad that we didn't start talking about this earlier, because they say it so many times that we couldn't stop laughing, because mentally I keep hearing Tony Montana and Tony Montana, right? And then I'm like, but they keep saying it, Tony, right? And I'm like, what did they just say?
Those fucking Tonys. I mean, any Tonys. Don't trust bad them. News, man. Bad news. Any Tony. You know, I got my eye on you, Tonys.
And I love that when they're showing the footage, he goes, stop it. Rewind it. Zoom in. I'm like, you can see it's him.
Need to freaking zoom in. Yeah. Like, it's clearly the guy that gave you up in the whole entire operation. So.
Well, Christopher Lee comes in and says he wants to talk to him. So they have their first meeting where he basically talks about how he cared about her, and that now that Chuck Norris is like not a cop, is he open to working for him? And Chuck Norris is like, I'm not for sale. Of course.
Chuck Norris isn't for sale.
And they're making a suggestion that Christopher Lee and the woman who died might have had some kind of relationship beyond it. But they're like, they're suggesting like, oh, I don't think it was sexual. Maybe. He likes Asian women.
Yeah. Rosalind Chow's character's name is Linda, and we should remember that.
And I guess Linda, what she was investigating was that the Triad were running the docks and shipping heroin. So that's like the plot line.
Yeah, so we know now getting in deep with this nonsense, and they were onto her. They were onto her big time, and that's why they killed her, because they knew that she was onto them.
Yes. So. And that's why they were in the background of the video. They were watching her.
Yeah, they were watching her. Now, Heather, who was her friend upstairs, she was a little bit too close to the situation, too, and started asking too many questions. So someone broke into her apartment and ransacked that shit.
Yeah, she calls Chuck Norris and says, oh, hey, my place has been ransacked now.
Yeah, so someone's going to go after her.
Yeah.
And so he tells her, hey, pack a bag and come to my house. So we know there's going to be some 80s titties and all that stuff. I can't. You know, like the whole slow burn of like the...
We knew, we were wondering how this would happen. We didn't know, we knew it was going to, like, oh, I guess this is going to happen now. There's going to be a sex scene. What will it be?
Yeah.
I was laughing that. Wouldn't it be funny if they just zoomed up? Because there's like a scene of the dog like sadly watching. And I was it was like sex music. But then when they panned up, I thought, would it be funny if they're just banging away at this on this table?
It was so funny because
they're just having a nice dinner.
It was hysterical because he was wearing like clearly a pimp shirt. Okay?
Yes, he was.
He looked like Rudy Ray Moore in Disco Godfather.
Jeez, have we not done any of his movies on this one?
Because they're just so good. Yes, I mean, they're not talking trash worthy because they're so great. But yeah, he was like, I'm going to bed this chick. Oh, yeah.
Well, it happens only because, and we skipped two of things, but I'll get back to it. But yeah, the only reason that they have sex is that Chuck Norris has terrible nightmares suddenly.
Yeah, so he's been having like visions. So like when he does his workouts and he's punching the workout bag and stuff, he's having visions of Terry Kaiser getting burned.
So we watch it multiple times. And
we
burning.
Have to see Terry Kaiser die a lot.
A lot. And so he has it in the middle of the night. He has a terrible nightmare about seeing Linda's body and seeing Terry Kaiser burn, and the person driving away in a car, specifically with this dog in the window, and. And he wakes up in a cold sweat, and I guess there was a ring or something, and he knocked over the phone. So for some reason, the girl that's staying over,
Heather,
she hears all this from across the house somehow and comes running.
How big is this house?
I know, right?
How many rooms does he have?
He actually talks about it, which was one of the things that I appreciated, is like movies like this never explain themselves. So why the cop has the nice car, why he has this cool house.
It's just an 80s cop cliche.
They actually say that he's like, I restored it. I built this house myself. I own the land and I built it.
Like, how does he own the land? He's on the water.
Well, he's like, I guess he owned that certain spot. I don't know.
I thought it was a houseboat.
It wasn't. Yeah, I don't think so at all. I don't know. That's a good question. But he's like, I restored my car. That's how you can afford that. You know, all this stuff. So I was like, okay, at least they're explaining themselves. But she comes running into his room. What's the matter? What's the matter? Oh, Scott. What's his name in this movie? Oh, his name's
name
Kane,
is Kane.
I forgot the last first name. But she's like, what is
Sean?
Sean. And she says a lot. And you made a joke about it during the movie. like, Sean, Sean, what is it, Sean? Right. And he's sweating like perfume.
He looks like, is his name Sean?
Yeah, yeah. He looks terrible. And this doesn't seem like the right moment for it, but she's like, oh, Sean. And she looks at him like, I'm ready.
Yeah, like we're just gonna do it.
We're gonna do it. And he just looks at her like, now he's like, I just had the worst nightmare of my life.
I'm so what would make me feel better?
He looks over and he goes, yeah, all right.
Some booty.
Yeah. So not only do we get that booty there, I guess the dog actually is us, because the dog runs out
and shuts
the door himself.
I love that fucking dog.
Which I love. But then we think, oh, that's it. That's all there is. Nope.
No.
We get a shower sex scene after that.
And we see 80s boobies.
Yeah. But now here's two of the things that we skipped over.
Well, this is so cliche-ish anyway, because they're like, okay, of course they're going to be together. Come on.
Yeah. Why? So stupid. Yeah.
We don't need all that.
Yeah. So two of the things that happened between all that was that Mako went to a house that he got like a heads up about. That he got, because when they saw the footage, they saw that Tony Montana was on that footage. I don't know what his name was. It was Tony something or other.
Montoya.
Tony Montoya. How do I not remember that?
Tony Montoya, Nikki.
He's in the footage, so he's looking for him, but they can't find him. Well, he gets a heads up that Mako has shown up at a house, and he's like terrorizing it. So when Chuck Norris gets in the house, we see that it's Stuart Pankin's house, the actor Stuart Pankin, who is also in the genius movie Mannequin 2.
Oh my God. Stop.
He is dressed like Meatloaf when he did a Dashboard Light. I'm blown away by what the choice was here. And Mako's just kicking everybody's ass in the house. And then Chuck Norris has to step in and like knock them all out.
But why?
So it's
nothing was learned here.
Stuart, this is where they tell them where Tony Montoya is. And
he's Stuart, just a brothel.
Stuart Pankin is got women all over him, and he's just so flamboyant. I don't know what's going on, but again, Stuart Pankin, hilarious. This actor in the 80s just making me laugh my ass off when shows up. I think
they just wanted to throw him in the movie.
I love this guy.
There was no rhyme or reason to this whole freaking scene.
It's so weird. There's like a moment where like Chuck Norris leans over and kisses him.
It was so weird.
And he whispers in his ear, and I was like, what is happening?
Yeah, I got nothing on that scene.
But they talk him into giving up Tony Montoya.
The LaBelle customer knows that whatever transpires between he and myself is sacred. It's a trust, Mr. Kane, never to be violated. How long do you think I could maintain this quality business? Please, please be careful with that. Sean, don't drop that. Don't drop that! Sean, I know where Tony is, and I will tell you. You barbarian.
And so
he's at a brothel.
So he goes to a brothel and Mako helps him get in, and they go and he roughs this guy up in this brothel. Like they're all smoking opium and stuff. And like, it's like an opium den. It looks like.
Yeah.
And he roughs him up and he's like, I didn't mean to set you up. They had me there was nothing I could do. They were going to kill me. And I didn't want it to happen. So they bring him out, and he's like, you're going to go in, you're going to tell the cops everything or whatever. So they bring him outside. When they get outside, that professor shows up in a car, and a guy leans out the thing and starts shooting at them with a machine gun. It's a freaking
drive-by. Now, yeah. Okay, this is a very impressive scene, because number one, how could they have known that they were going to be outside at that moment in time?
It's okay. Great. Yeah, they're in a back alley.
In a back alley. Now, Chuck Norris's beautiful cherry red, what was it? Trans Am?
It looks like it, yeah.
Okay, that beautiful car is there down the alley, and he's with Mako, and the three of them are there. And so
Mako goes, get down.
Yeah. And they literally stop, drop, and roll. Now, there's
Chuck Norris puts his body on top of Mako, which is cool.
Which is cool, but there's no, like, the car doesn't get blasted. There's no holes in the windshield. There's no holes anywhere near the car. And they're just laying out in the open on the ground.
Yeah.
I have never seen anything like this.
I think Blues Brothers, when Carrie Fisher had the machine gun and was shooting at them for like 10 minutes, and then they just stood up.
Yeah, that, oh my God, that is the perfect way to describe this. There was nothing, they were like the worst shots I've ever seen.
The funniest part is, right, Tony, Montoya, he doesn't roll into the car. He almost rolls onto the car to protect himself, but he still lays there in the open.
Yeah.
And then here's the best part is they stop shooting for a second. He gets up and runs towards them.
The car. Yeah.
And he gets instantly pulled into the car by the professor, and they obviously kill him as they drive off. Why did he run to his death?
Now, here's the thing. There is literally a door right there where you can go inside, back inside that brothel or whatever, that opium den. Nobody did that. They literally just dropped to the pavement and hope for the best.
Yeah.
That's what they did.
I think the only information they were even given by this guy was that there is a boat.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And that there are shipping heroin out there and they're using some kind of cover. So now that leads Chuck Norris to go home to that girl. And
she's doing her own investigation. But she was unpacking her bag.
The dog actually unpacks the shoes for her.
Yeah, so the dog is trying to help. He's so sweet.
And he gets reprimanded. And I was very mad about it. She says,
don't touch my shoes. But the key was inside the shoe.
Yes.
The key that Linda
It didn't fall out had. When she packed.
No.
I didn't understand that at all.
So that's why she had to go to Linda's and get her stuff, that's her stuff. So Linda knew that she would eventually be getting her shoes back. So that's why she put the key in there for her to find. So all that nonsense for nothing. This movie could have been shortened by 20 minutes. But so she goes down to the freaking train station.
Well, while Chuck Norris goes to the boat, he basically like locks her in and says, I'll be back, you know. He's going on this one-man mission to the docks to take this battleship.
It's a freaking battleship.
It's a battleship. To raid this battleship and check the cargo.
Right.
So while he's doing that, she finds the key, and she figures out where the locker is instantly.
Yep, and there's a little tape inside.
Just one tape. No note, nothing.
Nothing. So what do you think that this dumbass broad does? She doesn't take it to the police or the FBI or anything like that.
She takes it back to her news station to listen to it. And she tells him on his answer machine, that's where she's going to be. Meet her there after what he's doing. So now let's cut to the mission.
Oh, my God.
Because this mission is amazing.
Oh, my God.
There's so many things that happened in this mission that we were just like, why? What was happening?
It made me love this movie. Yeah. It just made me love this movie. It was just so amazing, this shit that was happening. He gets on this boat, and he starts taking out these dudes, dumping them overboard, kicking their ass, all sorts of stuff. He comes upon the shipment of what looks like fireworks.
It says explosives.
It says explosives. Yeah, okay.
It says explosives.
So he opens one of the crates, and inside one of the, looks like a firework, like a, what do you call it, a Roman candle or something?
Yeah,
is
sure.
Cocaine. So that's how they're trafficking the drugs in there, in the crates full of fireworks.
Yeah.
So he finds out, but then he gets caught.
How does he get caught? Because this is the dumbest shit I've ever seen someone do in my life. He leaves his cutting tool. And by the way, when he opened the crate, it was the loudest shit you've ever heard. He actually goes, he like crack, whoop, stops, and then looks around and he goes, eh, and then rips it off.
Yeah. Okay.
Even louder.
First of all, let me tell you, if you had that amount of money in crates like that, like you would have 16 people guarding it at all times.
Yeah. And he goes and he leaves his cutting tool. He puts the board back on, but leaves the knife on top, and then goes behind and starts looking. And then he goes, oh shit, I want my knife back.
Why?
So he starts reaching for his knife, and he does it in the slowest, most idiotic fashion you can imagine. And of course, he drops it.
Of course.
And he signals to every bad guy who's just walked into the room that he's there.
Yes, but then the bad guys come after him, and he does the most badass thing I have seen Chuck Norris do.
This
so
is amazing.
So far,
yeah.
He jump kicks a light fixture that creates sparks and sets the goddamn fireworks on fire.
And before that, if that wasn't cool enough, before he does that, he sticks his knife in the thing and pops off the top of the fireworks underneath it, in a quick motion, pop off, kick the light, put sparks into the thing. But here's my question. They're not fireworks.
What do you mean?
They're not fireworks.
Because they light on fire?
They're smuggling cocaine. They go off like fireworks.
No, you misunderstood. So they did have some fireworks mixed in. But most of them were, you know, just trafficking, that they were holding the cocaine, some of them.
Okay.
Yeah. So of them were fireworks.
This goes up fucking quick.
Yeah.
And I love later on in like a couple scenes later, they go, all the shipment is fine. And I was like, wait, no, there is no way. This was a firework disaster.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, it was crazy. But yeah, there were some fireworks that were fireworks.
He takes a couple and puts them in his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And like, he's like, oh, these are not fireworks, I guess. And he puts them in his pocket and he fights his way out.
He fights his way out. And meanwhile, you forgot to mention that Richard Roundtree and the some police are actually watching him, right? Aren't they?
I guess, yeah, you're yeah, right, they are. Yeah,
they're staking out the goddamn boat, they so they keep, know.
And Richard Roundtree's like, he's gonna fuck all this up.
Jesus, that son of a bitch is gonna blow everything.
That's basically it.
Right, so they see him doing this, and they're not doing a goddamn thing.
Yeah, not all. Helping or stopping
just
it.
Just sitting there, across the dock with binoculars, watching this whole thing.
I guess what Richard Roundtree, well, we'll talk about it. So...
This one, I thought Richard Roundtree was the bad guy.
It's too obvious in this point. But right. we all know, let's face facts, Christopher Lee's in this movie. It doesn't take a genius.
Christopher Lee
We saw Christopher Lee, we're like, oh, he's the villain. Yeah, he's else is the villain? Someone in the cop station. And you said, well, it's got to be the other cop.
Of course, I said it's the nerdy one with the leisure suit.
And I was like, yeah, it does seem like it, but it's just too obvious.
Yeah, he's the mosier. And moseys.
Richard Roundtree is a very famous person at this time. Why is he in this then? You know, right. I don't know. But while Chuck Norris fighting his way out of this boat is crazy. Every scene and every shot is just like baffling.
Mm-hmm.
Like someone shoots at him in a hallway and then it always misses. Everybody
never
is missing.
Gets like, hit.
They're all like, stormtroopers.
That just goes to show you about the freaking stop, drop, and roll. Like, literally, they're using machine guns. Why are they not hitting him?
Yeah. One guy shoots at him in a hallway of a boat, which is like, you know, it's only one corridor. There's nowhere to hide. There's nowhere to miss.
No.
He misses by shooting a box on the wall next to him. And then the guy must just give up because
he never pursues him.
He doesn't pursue him.
He just lets him run away.
Yeah, he actually doesn't run away. He goes around the corner and punches another guy in the face.
Yeah. Like, I'm like, what is that? These are the worst henchmen I've ever seen. Yeah. The worst cops and the worst henchmen of
it's crazy.
Time.
Well, he dives right into the ocean, swims back to his home, which, by the way, nobody seems to go to.
Nobody seems to go to, but he finds the note that she left, Heather, that says, I'm going to, you know, meet me at the news station or whatever. So he gets Mako.
No. He doesn't get him. He goes right to the police station. He goes to the
news station.
The news station. When he gets in to the elevator, it's his friend cop. And he's like, we were called here.
Mm-hmm.
We're all here. We were called because you guys got a tape with evidence about what's going on in the shipment. And he's like, it turns out that there's a boat at the harbor that has cocaine and fireworks. Go down there and get it. He's like, all right. Well, right now we have to figure out what's going on with this tape upstairs. So they get into the elevator, they go upstairs, they get in there, and you hear the tape playing, and the tape is of Christopher Lee talking about selling the merch.
Yeah, Christopher Lee is obviously the main mastermind behind all this.
And then Christopher Lee stops the tape.
Come here, Mr. Kane.
Sean!
I understand that since you left the force, you no longer carry a weapon. Does he, McCoy?
And he's like, welcome. So now and you find out he's got the girl hostage with his henchman. And then the cop turns his gun on Chuck Norris. He's a bad guy. And so instead of blowing his brains out right there or throwing him out the window, they just tie him up. They tie his hands behind his back.
I know. Now, this is a man who can fight with no arms.
And to quote this movie, Christopher Lee says, does he have a gun on him? And he goes, he doesn't need a gun.
He is a weapon.
I mean, he can fight just using his beard when he has one.
So they tie his hands behind his back and they go, okay, we're going to leave you now and not make sure you're killed. So they go up to the roof to a helicopter and they take the girl with them. So he's left with these two goons and the two goons start choking him out. They're going to kill him.
Oh, here comes Mako.
Mako sneaks in. Mako comes out of nowhere and kicks their asses and beats them. And he goes, you didn't fill me in like you were supposed to. We're supposed to be a team.
Yep.
And he goes, you're right.
Cool.
We are a team now. take care of these guys. I'm going to go get the other ones.
Yeah.
And Mako's like, hey, you son of a bitch.
This is amazing because now we're coming to the climax of the film and it just gets crazy. It just gets crazy with all the silliness that happens.
Well, the helicopter leaves and they leave that one cop.
So Chuck Norris has like a fight with him. Now, where the hell are they?
They're on top of the roof to the news station.
Okay, now there's workers up there.
So there's some workers working on, I don't know what it is, but they seem to be building something up on top.
Yeah.
There's this crazy thing that's like going over some steel bars. And it's like, I don't know what it is, but they're moving it. And they fight this directly on top of where this thing's going. And so you know where this is going to head.
Yeah, so the bad guy cop is going to get squished under there, which is exactly what happens. But now the freaking best thing happens ever, where we know that Mako and Chuck Norris are going to Christopher Lee's house.
Yeah, Christopher Lee's. Of course, Christopher Lee doesn't destroy the tape either. He takes the tape. He takes the girl to his house where he has a giant party full of other investors in the heroin. He's got the Boogie Nights party going on in his house.
And you know, I wasn't going to say it. I didn't want to say it to you because you would have been womp womp, but I was going to say, cast it into the fire.
With everything.
With the tape. Why didn't he burn the tape?
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Fucking evidence on it.
He goes, why would he take this girl hostage home to his friends and family?
Like, why?
I don't understand it.
Why? So he had all these men in there. There must have been at least 50 people in this house.
So he's got the professor there. The professor laughing, holding the woman hostage. And he gets Chuck Norris and Mako get there. And then they sneak in and we see that Richard Roundtree and every single cop ever is all on a hill watching from a hill.
It's the worst copping ever.
Yeah. First off, what hill are they on? And how does Christopher Lee's men not know there's a bunch of cops up there?
I thought for sure that they were just going to whip out, like, you know, a nice cup of tea and some biscuits and just sit and watch the show because the cops were doing nothing.
In SWAT outfits.
This is part two of them doing nothing.
And Richard Roundtree keeps going, just wait.
It's Kane. It's with another man, Chinese. They're climbing up to the house. Do you want us to intercept them?
No, we can't move yet.
Right. Why?
So we see that Mako and Chuck Norris go through this place and they just start kicking the shit out of people.
Okay.
Chuck Norris kicks at least three people in the driveway off of a hill, which we later on found out, doesn't that hill lead to another driveway? Like, doesn't it go up a hill?
Yeah, so the guys that were rolling down the fucking hill would have been in the driveway.
In the driveway.
There's nobody there.
There's never anybody.
It was so funny. Chuck Norris, though, I'm going to tell you, he really kicked some ass, though.
This whole thing is amazing.
I mean, this movie, just this scene alone of all this ass kicking made up for the three previous movies of no ass kicking.
Oh, without a doubt. I actually erased all three movies from my memory.
It did. It really did. I don't even recall, you know, Whispering Woods or whatever that movie was.
And that was our favorite so far of the bunch.
The Warrior in the Spirit Realm or whatever that movie was.
Yeah. This is just Chuck Norris now and Mako kicking everybody's ass, getting to the big bads. So we just get like scene after scene of them kicking ass.
Just roundhousing.
Oh, so much shit going on.
At one point,
Chuck Norris just grabs a shotgun and blows a guy away.
Oh, my God. That's the first time he actually killed somebody.
Well,
though,
he threw a knife at somebody earlier in the film, too.
Yeah, okay, so this is the second time. So but I'll tell you, though, he wasn't wearing tight jeans this time. He was going in for the slacks, and he was going in hard, and he was just roundhousing everybody right in the chest.
Is he still wearing the red sweater in the sequence?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I can't believe that's the outfit.
Red is my favorite color, and it's not a badass sweater by any means.
No.
But he did it right. And he was rocking black those gloves, roundhouse.
Black gloves. Red sweater.
Red sweater.
White collar coming out of the top.
White collar coming out. Some black slacks. You know, gave him some ballroom so he can do those roundhouse kicks. He was jamming.
Oh, we got to talk about Mako's outfit.
Oh, Mako. Oh, my God. He looked like a henchman himself.
Mako's got a black... like a
turtleneck
underneath a like a jacket. It was like a
polyester jacket, like a plaid jacket.
And then he had a black hat.
He had a fedora.
A fedora.
He looked like literally a 1930s gangster.
I swear to God, I was like, oh, I'm all about Mako's outfit right now. Like,
yeah, how come he gets to look cool? Chuck Norris looks like a dad.
So now here's where my disappointment sets in, because you know that the two last fights are going to be the professor and Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
Because, and it, my problem here is Chuck Norris is kicking everybody's ass. He's killed. He must knock out. There's one part where he kicks a guy so much that he kicks him up onto a diving board just to kick him off the diving board.
Yeah.
It goes on and on. I was laughing so hard. I'm like, this is amazing.
It's like, I'm not done with your ass yet.
So I said.
Ain't going in the pool.
Yeah. If you have this, and I swear to God, every henchman looked like the same guy recycled. So it made me laugh every time. But. I was like, now, do we really need to see Chuck Norris also beat the professor? Because this is Mako's daughter. They're trying to get revenge. One of the things they're getting revenge for is Mako's daughter was killed by the professor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm mad that what I wanted was we're going to see Mako finally kick ass and fight the professor full on. And that, because early in the movie, Chuck Norris couldn't budge him when he got tied up in the building. So I was like, okay, let Chuck Norris have Christopher Lee, because Christopher Lee is the one we find out that definitely killed Terry Kaiser in the opening. He was the one driving that car with the dog in the window, because it's his dog, which is wild that he went to an ambush. Why would he have done that? Beyond me, but doesn't matter. So I was like, Chuck Norris can have Christopher Lee. Let's let Mako have revenge on the professor. Unfortunately, that's not what happens. It's all Chuck Norris movie. And Chuck Norris, Mako fights the professor, but let's face facts, Mako is so small compared to that guy. This guy just throws him around the room.
Yeah, everybody's small compared to this guy.
So he throws him around the room so much that finally Chuck Norris has to come in the room and fight him. But the professor does kick the shit out of Chuck Norris.
He does. He gets him really messed up.
He's not bloody. He's never hurt, although he's thrown into at least 50 bottles of liquor. Smashing
a
them.
Mirror,
just a mirror,
a table,
no cuts on his face. No, I was so mad about this.
He's fine.
And in fact, by the way, we didn't mention how funny it was when he took his shirt off early in the film, because he only had one little bandage where he got shot.
I know,
it was like a perfect little square.
It was a perfect little. I know. I was like, oh,
I was like,
Lord.
Fuck you, no. Man. He got shot in the shoulder, like pretty well.
Yeah, he has a clause in his contract. Probably don't mess with the face. Don't mess with the face.
I don't think there was clauses back then, but. Because we've seen in these other movies that he did look a little cut. We've seen a couple other ones that
he has looked a little cut before.
This, unfortunately, he doesn't look like that. Although this fight looks like he does get his ass kicked. He finally gets up, and I guess he gets Chuck rage, because out of nowhere, he gets enough strength to kick this guy's ass. Because the movie even decides, this is so epic. This is such a badass kick. We're not even going to put in a sound effect of normal kicking. We're going to use the laser blast from Star Wars as a kick and punch sound effect.
Yeah.
So he kicks the professor. He kicks him so hard, it goes, whoosh, and then it does it again, and he goes flying through like this cabinet and just falls in through it. And he's like, out.
Yeah. I feel like, okay, this guy... He was a monster, okay? There's no way that Chuck Norris is taking him out. There's just no way.
I wanted this to be more epic.
Yeah, I wanted it to be more epic, too. But I wanted Mako to be the one to do it, because it was his daughter. I feel like he's owed that revenge.
He deserved
revenge.
It. It's almost like the movie forgot at one point that he was the father of this woman.
Yeah.
And how messed up that was. And it's like they just started making him like the fun sidekick.
Yeah, they did.
And I do really like it, and I wish it was a bigger part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because they seem like they were fun together.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, he doesn't get to do anything cool. And then Chuck Norris goes and fights Christopher Lee next.
Well, he beats his ass really quickly. He just has a gun on the girl and he's threatening to kill her. But meanwhile, he still has that tape of evidence in his coat pocket.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just such a cliche with like villains in movies. Like, why would you keep the evidence? Burn it. Like, what is the reasoning?
I don't understand this.
He's just incriminating himself.
I love it because everybody's Richard Roundtree, by the way, at the same time while this is happening, I guess we should have pointed out Richard Roundtree has decided to storm the castle. And we have in the background, in the background of these fights is an entire war going on. There is gunshots. They're shooting the house all over. Everybody's getting shot.
It's a disaster. It is like a war zone.
It looks like the end of Glory. They're all like going over the hill. Like the whole SWAT team's getting murdered on the hill, rolling down. Mm-hmm. You've got good guys rolling into bad guys. Bad guys rolling into good guys.
Yeah.
It's just chaos. It's
chaos.
And I'm all for it because the house looks like Swiss cheese at this point.
It does.
But at the end, everybody's in there. The good guys have won. And he grabs Christopher Lee by the throat and starts choking him to death. And now he's choking him good. Christopher Lee's just
fucking I mean, that's pretty good acting.
Yeah, it's pretty good acting. But everybody's like, stop, don't, you know?
No, don't.
Please. Please. But they're like, hey, he has the tape in his pocket.
Just take the tape.
Yeah, the tape is the evidence. We're going to lock him up forever. I mean, we have him on cop murder. We have him on drug shipments. We have him on all this stuff. But I forgot
not to mention the goddamn truck with all the drugs is sitting outside the house.
I forgot to mention this. One of the funniest things, and I love this in movies when characters do this, but he gives Mako, he goes, hey, they're shipping heroin, or like powder heroin, like whatever, in these fireworks. And then Mako opens the firework and smells it. And I kept laughing. I was like, there's nothing like sniffing the powder in the movie to know if it's good or not.
Well, at least it didn't taste it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's worse when you sniff it. But so, yeah, he's like, we got everything on him. So he's choking him. He gives up. He goes, okay. He lets him go. It virtually goes into that walking away, freeze frame, happy Mako. Him. I don't know why Mako's happy. He's lost everything. They've lost everything. But now Chuck Norris has a girlfriend, so they're good. So they freeze frame of the three of them all hugging each other, like walking into the sunset.
Yeah, Finn.
We have to talk about the background
but
actor.
I noticed something in this movie that it is literally at the 11th hour. I mean, it's the very end of the movie when the three of them are walking away from the house. You can see that the SWAT guys are walking around and trying to clean up the mess. But apparently this one SWAT actor did not get the appropriate script because he is still behaving as though there's an ambush going on. And you can see him in the background hiding behind the walls and starting to aim his gun. But the battle's over.
And then he realized.
The battle is over. And then I think the actor at that moment realized that he was in the wrong scene.
Yes.
I was dying. I was laughing.
You rewind it and you're like, do you see this guy in the background?
For 30 straight minutes, I was laughing because I could not believe this. Like, was there a director? Did anyone tell this poor actor that, dude, you're in the wrong scene right now? Because everyone's just slowly walking around trying to assess the damage and he's still acting like he's in battle. It was fucking hilarious.
It made me laugh so hard. To watch this guy hiding behind a pillar while in the front of him is a guy limping and another guy holding him and other guys like wrapping up bodies and he's still like swatting.
I swear I wish that like if that actor would ever listen to this podcast.
Oh, jeez.
And I want you to come forward. Tell us what happened.
Oh, God.
Tell us what happened, man.
It's one of my favorite things is finding finding background actors like doing that.
Yeah.
You know, like messing up or leaving a shot in and it's like there for all time.
Like you found the legs in the one movie.
Oh, yeah.
Night Train to Terror.
I found the
legs in the background, but this was too much. I had to tell you about it because I was like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. I was supposed to be looking at the three of them walking towards the camera. I know that's where our focus was supposed to be, but I couldn't help it. I'm always looking in the background. And I saw that guy and I was like laughing for 30 straight minutes. I mean, it was too much. So we'll try to put a clip of that on there so you can see it.
What
happened? On Instagram.
Oh, on Instagram.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about the time that I went to see a screening, like an early screening for the movie Patch Adams? I think it was Patch Adams or Shallow Hal. I don't remember. I think it's one of these two movies. I went to see an early screening and they didn't format it properly. So what I saw was the cut. So what I saw was I could see all the microphones.
Oh my God.
In all the shots. And there was I think if it was Shallow Hal, it was a scene where it was Patch Adams. And they went to that scene where they go to the hospital and they see the kids and the sick kids or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he makes them all laugh. There was the microphones and I could see crew.
Oh my God.
And I was like, wow. I can't even take this seriously. It was so odd.
Did you get like the rough draft?
I think it was like, I don't think they like cut it properly to fit the screen. And then they had like, I have no idea what happened, but it was so bizarre that I had seen it like that.
Wow.
That for some reason it can never leave my mind that I saw how weird it was. Like, mm-hmm. And the movie's like good. And it was just all these scenes with microphones and like director in there. And yeah. I was like, what the hell is that guy, crew guy right there?
I love that kind of stuff.
That was weird. It was one of the weirdest movie theater experiences I've ever had. So yeah, the movie ended. It ends on one of those songs that sounds, again, this movie's theme, which sounds like it's a 70s cop drama.
Yeah.
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 I'm always waiting for it.
I have to say though, I mean, okay, this movie was fun.
Oh,
like, I mean, this is a very Chuck Norris movie. I was happy because I've been very disappointed thus far.
Yes.
And to see him back in action, anyway, to see him doing, you know, all these roundhouse kicks and fighting and stuff, I was like, yeah, it just made me happy.
And, you know, something about it worked better here than it ever has in the other ones. I don't know if it's they got a little more aware of how badass he is and they went with it. Mm-hmm. Here it makes sense. Like, he's a guy on a mission to get revenge.
Yeah.
And it doesn't still get there because he's still having a good time joking around with Mako, which is weird. Meeting a girl and having a relationship. Those things are there. And you feel like they shouldn't be.
I mean, life happens even though you're on a mission to bring down the bad guy. Well,
say that to Frank Castle.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't see Frank Castle having a great time with anybody.
No.
Poor bastard. So anyways.
We're, of course, talking about Punisher.
Thank you. that's one of my things about the movie that feels like, I can see why it's not liked. Because this has a 5. And I was like, what is it about this movie isn't that great? So I don't know. But if I had to rate this movie, without a doubt, I'm disagreeing with IMDb.
Yes, me too.
And I'm giving this a 6.
I'm giving this a 6 too. I love this movie. This
was a fun film.
This movie was a rootin' tootin' good time.
I hate to say it, but thanks. You know, I'd hate to say it too. But you're welcome.
As action movies go, I don't know why this isn't the one people talk about with him.
Right. I mean, it had all those cliches with the cops and the love interest and all this, you know, biz. But yeah. I mean, ultimately, though, this was a Chuck Norris movie that I wanted. I've been waiting 3 movies we watched back to back, you know, and now I finally ended on a Chuck Norris-y Chuck Norris
exactly.
movie. So I'm like, I'm pretty happy. I think that I, you know, yeah, we suffered through 3 and it wasn't a bad suffer, but you know, still suffer. I'm happy with this. And you know, I gotta say, I said these words to you. I said, there's no way there's gonna be a 1 on IMDb. There's no way.
Yeah.
And I only saw 2. No ones.
Yeah, I saw 2. I saw IMDb. A couple 3s.
Yeah.
A lot of people saying this movie just sucks. And I'm like, well, why? And I saw someone say, why do people like Chuck Norris? And I was like, okay, that I agree with. And that's why we're kind of doing this whole month. Like, what is it about Chuck Norris movies? And I know we picked movies under 6 on purpose. So that's what we do on the show. Give them a second chance.
Yeah.
But we've even seen, I think, 3 movies of his off of the show.
Yep.
And 4 if you count Expendables.
Mm-hmm.
And out of those movies, they're all been really like, these are not great.
Right.
So it's kind of a shock. But seeing this movie, I go, oh, this is fun.
Yeah, this is a hoot. I mean, that's why I don't have a segment. I'm not doing my segment because there's no ones. And, you know, I thought this movie was fun. It's
hard to complain about. And it's a rare thing that we actually find a movie that we're like, I really like this movie.
Yeah.
I think last month I was almost there with Crawl Space, where I'm like, Crawl Space isn't that bad. I'm like,
oh my God.
I'm like, this isn't as bad as I was expecting it to be. I think I kind of like this film. And the same thing goes here. I'm like, this isn't that bad. This is actually a lot of fun. Yeah. And by the way, this is a longer film. This is an hour and 45 minutes.
It is, yeah.
And long. Usually an hour and 45 minutes, you're like, oh, can you end? This is too much.
Yeah.
And I'm the opposite. I'm like,
well, they could have cut off a good 15 minutes of it. With some of the silliness that they went through just to introduce the character of Heather with the shoes and, you know, the clothes and all that silliness. Like, we didn't need all that going down to the morgue. And, you know, they could have cut some of that stuff out.
Yeah, I guess so.
There was a couple of things that was like, all right, then we didn't need all that.
But I was never bored once.
No, I wasn't bored at all. I mean, I was so excited because around every corner he was roundhousing.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah.
And it was a lot of stunt work, a lot of interesting ideas. It's just that stuff like, I think what keeps it from being a classic action film is all the dumb shit, like people shooting the floor and they're laying right there and they can't hit them.
You know,
stuff like that. Or it just makes it so ridiculous. And then the no justice, it's like they forgot, like, oh, we're supposed to be getting revenge for this girl.
Right.
You know, like none of that. So,
no.
You know, unfortunately, that's what keeps it away from that great rating. And no beard.
I mean, he didn't have a beard. What the freak, man? I don't care how early in the show it is. You got to have a beard. I mean, we're at 81 here, 1981. What's going on? Okay. It was just missing. It was just the ruggedness was missing, and I needed it to round out that windbreaker in the tight pants.
I guess my final question to you is, does this make you want to watch more of his movies?
Or yes.
Do you feel like you still, I think I've had enough?
I want to watch the Missing in Action movies.
Okay.
I do want to watch those.
Yeah, we have the Octagon, like Delta Force. Kind of interested in those. I want to see, especially movies from the 70s, the late 70s, the early 80s. Mm-hmm. I think those are where we're probably going to be the most fun.
Yeah. I mean, anything 80s. But, there are cliches.
All the other movies we did this month were 80s.
Well, no, one was 90s. I think one was like 96.
That was Forest Warrior.
Yeah.
Which we actually didn't mind because it was a cute little kid's film.
It was like a kid's movie. But otherwise, I'm sorry, I just threw my...
I love it. Joe's headphones, everything flew off her head.
I
mean, everything
just flew off. I have an itch on my ear, and I just flew
off. The spirit of Chuck Norris kicked your headphones right off.
Yeah, man. You know, Chuck Norris, we're going to do more bearded Chuck. So we got to keep going. We're going.
Maybe one day we'll return. We'll see.
Yeah, we're going to put that clip of that that film flub on Instagram as soon as this episode releases, for sure. Because you have to see this. I've never seen anything like it. The guy's still in action, and the movie's over. It was funny.
All right. So you have any other parting thoughts?
I got nothing. No.
All right, then. All right. So, yeah, as always, we're shocked that we gave this movie a good score. Yeah. And we actually are very happy with this one. And it's a great way to end the month.
Yeah.
And happy birthday, Chuck. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Chuck.
So, thanks for listening, everybody. Hit us up on Instagram at Crafty Misfit, that's Joe, and me at Just Another Movie Night, and tell us what you think. Tell us Chuck Norris movies that you think are good.
Yeah, we want some recommendations on the Chuck movies.
So tell us the best that he's done, and we'll probably check those out too on the side, you know, whatever. So yeah, as always, thanks for listening. Have a good one. Bye.
I've just made a deal that'll keep the Empire out of here forever.
Come in, Mr. Kane.
I understand that since you left the Force, you no longer carry a weapon.
Does he, McCoy?
He is a weapon.
Well, then you'll have to keep him very carefully covered, won't you?
I had no choice. They arrived right before you did. I'm sorry.
You're all hard, buddy.